Okay, now sorry for the small delay. I had some special issues, so some issues to solve first. Welcome to the first session of this course. Here today we are going to go through Unit 1, the introduction. You can download your PowerPoint, the presentation I prepared, because there you also have some extra links and some extra references, and for your personal use. We are going to just see briefly what the contents are of the first chapter, and also some other concepts that I think are important for this course, to have some clear concepts, in your mind clear. And if you have any doubts, we will also answer them. You can ask your doubts here or in the forum for Unit 1, okay? So this book and this course is going to focus on the construction of dictionaries and the construction of ontologies. But we are also going to see in the first units the main concepts and also the construction of lexical products or lexicological databases, but especially ontologies and dictionaries. We will also go through the construction of terminological applications in Unit 6. Although, you know, Unit 6 is not mandatory for the course. Let's say that it doesn't, this information is not part of the exam, but it's very useful for you. And if you ever have to do a bachelor's thesis or a master's degree thesis, you can always use the contents of the last chapter, which are written by a specialist in terminology, which is Veronique Hoste from Ghent University. So we had the pleasure to invite her to write a chapter for the book. And it's always useful to know about terminology. And we will also have some extra sessions in the near future, talking about terminology and about the distinction between terminology and terminography. You should download the PowerPoint which says original. Okay. You can also download the one with annotations, but it's just some notes that I included that are just copy paste from the book. Okay. So when you download this question, it's useful for all of you. You are asking me whether to download the PowerPoint with annotations or without annotations. The annotations are just copy paste text from the book. That has to do with the part that I include in the PowerPoint. So if you want the annotations, it's fine, but you have everything in the book or in the course, because you know that the first two chapters are reproduced in the course, and you can download them there. So what is lexicography? What is the difference between lexicography and lexicology? Lexicography is just the craft of dictionary compilation. So everything that has to do with that. We will see this in detail in further units of the book and of the course. It is interesting to know that it is the oldest subdiscipline of linguistics. So that's, let's say, how linguistics started, by the compilation of dictionaries. Okay. There are many types of dictionaries, as you know. You can have lexicological dictionaries, normal type of dictionaries. Let's say the most frequent ones are the ones that include a lexical unit, and then you have some information about the pronunciation, about the different cognates or variations. Then you have the definition. We will see all this. You also have bilingual dictionaries. You have specific dictionaries for a specific type of languages, such as law language, for instance, or technology, etc. We will see this more in detail, as I said. What is the difference between lexicology and lexicography? Lexicography, as I said, is the craft of dictionary compilation, which is very interesting. And then lexicology is something that is used also in the craft of dictionary compilation, because it includes all kinds of investigation in the lexicon of a language. No problem. Welcome, all the ones who arrive a bit late, it doesn't matter. And the ones who cannot attend online now, synchronically, I will. This session is being recorded, so welcome everybody again. So as I said, lexicology is the science, the scientific investigation of the lexicon of a language. This is a definition that you can find in this reference, International Encyclopedia of the Social and Behavioral Sciences, that has had several editions. I think this definition is quite clear and interesting. Because it has to do, it is quite wide, because lexicology is wide. It has to do with historical development. You will see examples in the book, for instance, in the course book. I myself did my PhD on the development of a lexicological database for Old English. So it had to do with the morphological structure of English lexical items. It sounds complicated. You will see some examples in the book. The database we created is called Nerdus. Nerdus. But there are many other types of studies within the field of lexicology. They can have to do with gender, with language diversity, language change, codification of meaning, metalanguage, etc. So it's, as you see, it's quite more, let's say, abstract compared to lexicography, which is more a craft. Focusing on lexicography, we have to call the attention to digital lexicography. Obviously, this is the nowadays trend. Digital lexicography is what is done nowadays. And it's not, it's an ongoing development in the last few decades. Everything has moved from paper lexicography, from creating dictionaries that are going to become paper versions, to digital lexicography. And there are five lines of this development that can be distinguished. First of all, the creation of specific dictionaries for various tasks. And this part of this area of digital lexicography has to do a lot with lexicology, because these computer dictionaries are based on a machine-readable version of an existing printed dictionary, but they can be given different tasks. For instance, natural language processing, machine translation, the automatic text analysis, data mining, sentiment analysis. So it is very wide, the tasks these dictionaries can have. What is important is that all the lexical information is stored on the computer. And they include formal representation. So this formal representation is different from natural language. It's language independent. We will see this now in this presentation a bit further. Formal representation is what we call a metalanguage. For instance, we have the most famous type of structures or database that have been created and that are used for this digital development of computer dictionaries is WordNet, which was developed by Princeton, and FrameNet, which is developed in Berkeley. What they do is to create semantic relationships with different frames and a type of non-dependent language or symbols coming from logic, for instance, or from mathematics. And they use relations, semantic relations, to represent meanings. For instance, is a, is part of, different elements. This, as I said, we are on the introduction of this course. You will see more in detail in the next units, because we also deal with these databases, with this type of databases. Nowadays also, there is an increasing number of databases. This we know for sure already, we all know, an amazing amount of databases. They could provide computer-generated information about various lexical properties of a language. For instance, word frequency, whether they are graphemes or morphemes, word occurrences. So all these databases are used in the development of computer dictionaries, which is very interesting. For instance, here you have some examples of this type of databases. We have also Lingüe, for instance, the Spanish, which is very, very much used in Spain. These are just an examples of databases that can give a lot of information and that can be used in the development of electronical dictionaries, digital dictionaries. The other option is the most, the first one, the one that started everything, which was just, this is what we did with our lexicological database in the first instance. The first thing we did was to transfer the information that we found on printed dictionaries, especially in my case. It was an old language that doesn't exist anymore, such as old language, old English, sorry. So we first emptied, we say vaciar. We took all the information we found in the three most important dictionaries of Old English that have ever existed, and we compute, we included everything in a FileMaker database. So it was hand work, very exhaustive, and this is what is done at the, in the first instance. Why? Because later on the search is more faster. You can update once you have put everything you find in a paper dictionary, you include it in a computer database, everything, all the information is easy to update. And in fact, nowadays, such as happens in Wikipedia, there are volunteers or people who work for us as volunteers, academic volunteers or general public that want to participate in this, or emeritus researchers that participate in these type of updates. So a dictionary doesn't need to be printed every year. In fact, it can be updated almost daily. We have here some examples of digital dictionaries, but there are so many. These are just a few examples. And then something very interesting is once all this information has been transferred from paper dictionaries, from lexicographical databases or dictionaries, once this information is transferred into a machine, into a computer database, then we can keep on updating this and including more information based on computer tools. So an example here is the old the Oxford English Dictionary was based first on 5 million excerpts, which was first handwritten or in paper clips. Now, a computer can easily process corpora of several hundred millions of data. Occurrences and new sources are rapidly added day by day. So we would need 100 researchers working 100 years to implement all this information in a computer. So what they are doing is developing this analysis by making this automatic. Computer tools can also do immediately this type of analysis when you include certain rules, or we will see this, no, certain mandates, such as in this lexicological database, where you implement a special structure, metalinguistic structure, and then all the iterations that have to do with this structure are immediately analyzed as it. Imagine, for instance, in Spanish, the difference in gender. We can say, okay, everything that finishes in A is feminine, except of course, several contexts where this is not the case, and implementing certain rules, certain exceptions, etc. But you can automatize this, let's say. So when the computer receives specific information, it already can classify this lexical item into a certain category, let's say. And finally, the last development is the development. All these developments are complementary. Okay, the digital integral lexical systems. They are integrated. So in these digital systems integrate various sources of information that consist of a computer accessible and expandable corpus, a set of tools which allow the search for certain items, statistical analysis. There are programs that allow for this type of facilities, allowances, that have these certain allowances. In 2007, we used FileMaker, and now there is a different interface. This was a type of database that has been probably superseded by many other important databases and computer programs that can include all these facilities, all these allowances, like searching for an item, analyzing the frequency of occurrence, identifying unknown words, number of occurrences in a certain amount of contexts. I will give you, in the course, you will find a document with some of these nowadays tools that are available for free, accessible through the internet, and they are around, let's say, 50 types of tools, and these are only the ones that are for free. So there are many other ones that are professional and that you can pay for or that are still being developed. And finally, a selected but steadily proceeding lexical analysis of the corpus by experienced lexicographers. Here we have human post-edition, let's say. As in translation, we need to have post-edition processes, and a good translation, a good machine translation, will depend on whether it needs a lot of post-edition, which always needs humans, because the problem of this ambiguation is the biggest problem in translation, as you probably have seen in the translation course of this degree. We always have in this type of programs and utilities, we will always need at some point humans to revise the process. Okay, so no matter how, especially because the amount of possibilities, the amount of revisions will determine the quality of the final product. Okay, so we will always need need humans for the last processes. Okay, obviously it's like as I said in machine translation. So we have seen lexicography and how connected it is to lexicology. And now we will see lexicology in general, not only related to lexicography. Lexicology could be more the theoretical framework, right? Let's say, and it's less, as I said, less concrete, less specific. And we can study many topics that have to do with the study of language. For instance, in lexicology, we study the lexicon. We can study gender. Gender is a key category for lexicology because it is crucial to understand the nature of lexical entries. For instance, lexical entries in certain languages will depend on whether they have a linguistic gender or not in their language. Every language defines marks gender in a different way. Here you have an example. For instance, it is possible for certain nouns to be of different genders according to the sex of the speaker in Garifuna, which is an Arawak family spoken in Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. So the study of gender is very interesting, and it is something cross-cultural in the sense that there is no equivalence many times between the how we mark gender or not. That's why it's so interesting for lexicologists. And it is also very important, as I said, because it affects the shape of the lexical entries. And this question concerns, obviously, lexicologists. And as you see here, it's also of interest for other disciplines, such as psycholinguistics, also sociolinguistics, anthropological linguistics, etc. An important concept we need to have in mind in this course is the concept of the idea of conceptualization. You have seen this already in semantics, probably in detail. Here we are just going to see how this is connected to the development of ontologies in this case. Because conceptualization, there are many definitions. This is one of the definitions. You can find other definitions that fit you better. You are free to find other definitions, of course, because they will also be dependent on the theoretical framework of the person who creates this definition, who establishes a definition. Conceptualization in this case, for instance, from what we have included in the book is the process that leads to the extraction and generalization of relevant information from one's experience. Here, I want to focus on the idea of experience. Conceptualization has to do with experience. What we experience, out of what we experience, we create concepts. We design concepts in our mind. And these concepts we associate with certain references. There is a discussion going on whether this is an individual experience or whether this is a collective experience. But in the designing of ontologies, we need to create to see it as a collective process. Otherwise, it's impossible to design an ontology. And in the definition of rules, in the compilation of dictionaries also, we need to see conceptualization as something that we are wired to do. And also, we need to agree on the fact that a specific concept is going which means that depending on our reality, we have a different experience. Depending on this experience, we will have different concepts of life. And these concepts are culturally based because a specific culture is surrounded by specific experiences and therefore different concepts. For instance, you will see several examples in the book. You can think of different ones also. The idea of, for instance, in the they use the word sirimiri for a specific type of rain. But this is a type of rain that is very frequent in the north of Spain, but not in Andalusia. So this word will be more used and is created in, let's say, in the north Spanish language. Or the idea that in France, for instance, they have several names, many, many types of names for bread, because they have many types of breads, in Spain until very recently we had the pueblo, hueco, and sobado. That was all. Now we are getting into this world of bread, but this is quite recent in our culture, in our cultural history. So now it's when we start to see other types of bread and the masa madre, etc. But when you go to the north of Europe, not only France, you can also see that in Belgium, in Holland, in Sweden, Denmark, the amount of names they have to the amount of terms they use to name the concept of bread is amazing. So in this case, they share a specific conceptualization and we don't. Okay. So it has to do with, it becomes language specific. But first, this culture or this group of speakers have agreed on on these concepts. So conceptualization is going to directly affect the shaping of specific languages. Okay. Another important distinction that you need to know about, which you probably have seen already, is the difference between a semasiological approach, the semasiological approach to the study of language, and the onomasiological approach to the study of language. Both are complementary. They are not contrasting opposites, they are complementary. But it is true that one will be used more in certain disciplines and the other one will be used more in other disciplines. The semasiological approach is the one that starts from the form, from the name, from naming, and considers different meanings of the word and determines the interrelations with them. It discovers semantic relationships between different words. So it goes from the term to the concept. So this is specifically useful in the designing of terminologies. However, the onomasiological approach starts from the object, from the concept, and then it analyzes different words that are correlated to this concept. So this approach helps to discover how meaning is formed, and it considers properties and peculiarities. So it goes from the concept, to from the meaning to the word. And this is more this approach is used in the designing of ontologies. The use of a metalanguage, as I said, is very important for several reasons. Because we have different languages, and for instance, you have seen in semantics that the generative language, generative grammarians use one type of metalanguage, because this metalanguage is supposed to represent the underlying structure of all languages in the world. Functional linguistics or role and reference grammar use other types of metalanguage, which they apply to represent the underlying structures also of all the languages in the world. So the use of a metalanguage is cross-linguistic, let's say. It's used to represent categories, relations, and procedures. Here we have just an example, which is from Coral Representative Language. It's a database, it's an ontology. It's an ontology-based database, lexicological database, developed by our Chancellor Ricardo Mairal and Perignal Pascual and others some years ago. Here in this link you have the access to a very interesting document for extra information about how he wrote with Pamela Faber, a very important linguist in this world of lexematic functional linguistics, about the importance of developing a correct metalanguage for the designing of ontologies. So, and databases in general. Metalanguage is always necessary to build up an ontology, okay? Especially when it is aimed at several languages. Several linguistic models, I have given examples, have used different metalanguages. The ideal situation would have been that they all used the same metalanguage, but this is difficult, first of all, because they have everybody wants to improve and to propose a different metalanguage because they think their metalanguage is going to be easier or better, and also because their own conception of the structure of language is different, and they will use symbols that are better able to represent their own conception of the language. Okay. In my case, for instance, in my thesis, I applied the metalanguage used by the role and reference grammar school together with the functional lexematic school developed by Ricardo Mairal and others. But it is perfectly okay to use another metalanguage. But of course, depending on the purposes, in my case, for my purposes, the theory the linguistic, the framework, the theoretical framework about the conception of language, for me, was better for my purposes of representing Old English in this case. For other linguists, maybe generative metalanguage, generative grammar metalanguage is better. So it depends. It depends first on your theoretical standpoint. So there is not a common agreement, and there is still not a universal metalanguage, which makes it also in a way difficult for developers and for lexicologists, because nowadays there are thousands of ontologies around the world that are being developed, and it would be interesting if there was some agreement to create standard metalanguage for all types of ontologies. By now, this has not happened yet. This has to do with language-dependent and language-independent representation. Language-dependent representation is an example, a very clear example is dictionaries. Okay? The organization of words takes many forms. Knowledge representation takes the form of language. However, language-independent knowledge representation, an example would be mathematical annotation, parsers, and this is what we would use in the creation of lexicological databases, ontologies, where we add several mandates such as hierarchical organization, concepts, subconcepts, etc. Knowledge networks are developed through the knowledge representation, which is language independent. The truth is that, for instance, here, as you can see in the previous example from Corel, someone X1 say X2 for say. Somebody X3 related to a question X4. Here they are using English as for the structure of say as a lexical item in their conceptual representation language. So they are using language to represent a concept, which is everything related to the concept of saying. Okay, so the same happens for functional linguistics, for role and reference grammar, for cognitive linguistics. It is very difficult to escape the use of language. So in general, there is a combination of both. Language itself and non-language items such as numbers or logical notation coming from philosophy, philosophical logics, etc. And finally, the book has in this unit some ideas which are a kind of warm-up, theoretical ideas, some reflections about the different approaches to meaning interpretation. We have, for instance, the idea of cognitivism in ontologies. Ontologies are influenced by cognitivism in the fact that cognitivism was the first area in linguistics that introduced the concept of categorization. Categories are very important for ontologies. So this stems from cognitivism. Categorization has to do with how we structure the work into different categories. And these categories have different types of categories. They can be sort of an item, relational items, individual, collective, functional concepts. The structure of the category is also included. Relationships, frames, all these ideas of how we categorize the world stem from the world of cognitivism. Cognitivism is not only based on the last trends, which are metaphor and metonymy structures that we apply to the mechanisms of metaphor and metonymy applied to how we express our language in figurative language, etc. This is, let's say, one of the recent developments of cognitivism, but the most important one is the idea of categorization. Okay. Then we have the idea of predication. Predication started with Fillmore in the 70s. And this came into the idea that every relationship, every word has a frame structure. This also influenced role and reference grammar a lot and functional grammar from the Netherlands school, from Dick and followers. And it ended up in the development of resources such as FrameNet or VerbNet or WordNet. And finally, the philosophical perspective, which is more stance, philosophical stance, is that, well, they some authors such as Nirenberg and Ruskin, that will be mentioned a lot in the book, argue that the real distinction between ontologies and natural languages is that languages are used by people and ontologies are constructed for computers. So it's just a philosophical perspective. Let's say that is a reflection about what ontologies are for. Okay. There is a question I see. Is the lexical database, just a part of the ontology? Yes, together with the cognitive part of meaning. Well, an ontology, we will see different examples, is something a bit different from a lexical database. A lexical database makes use, a lexical database is part of an ontology, in fact. Or an ontology can use a lexical database to be developed. So you are saying that WordNet is a lexical database, exactly, and FangGram KB is an ontology, exactly. That's the point, yes. So, yes, they are, you will see when you enter that they are different in this. You have on the course book, on the virtual course, a different and interesting talk from Antonio Pareja, who is also a computational linguist, and he has a talk about the use of methodology and the construction of ontologies that can be interesting for you if you want to clarify your ideas about what an ontology is and how you can develop it. Any of you could design an ontology. I mean, you could design the parts of an ontology and then create some small examples of what an ontology is. And there is a methodology which is called methontology, and he describes this in that talk, which is in the virtual course. So if you want more information on this, you can check that video, okay? And finally, we have terminological applications, which, as I said, are not part of the final exam, but are very interesting because they are, in fact, terminological applications are very useful nowadays. They are really very practical oriented, and they are, let's say, the most practical oriented area of semantic applications. Terminology focuses on the linguistic analysis, but not on the analysis itself. The linguistic analysis, sorry, is more part of lexicology. Terminology is a handling of concepts for their application in everyday life. What is the difference between terminology and terminography and terminology as opposed to lexicology and lexicography? That they focus on the production and standardization of multilingual content for intelligent information retrieval and for intelligent information retrieval. This is a definition given by Veronique Hoste. She is a professor in Ghent University. They have a very interesting research group there that are specifically focused on the development of terminological databases for the companies. I don't know if you know the company Jan De Nul, for instance. Jan De Nul is one of the most important companies in the world. It's Belgian-based. It's Belgian. It's a Belgian company. For engineers doing, for instance, the canal, the different canals of the world. I don't know the names now. Oh my God. Well, Canal de Suez, Canal de, I don't remember. Sorry about for this sheer, pure ignorance. But okay. They are the ones who do such important constructions. Also, they have been working in Dubai doing, I don't remember what I know about the company, but let's say that the biggest constructions in the world, probably Jan De Nul will be there. So they handle a lot of information, a lot of document, a lot of instructions, a lot of manuals, user manuals. What does terminology do? To handle all this knowledge and all this language into a good gestión del conocimiento, into a good, you will see here, into a good database for understanding terms. If you have a user manual, for instance, and a specific term and a specific concept has many, many different uses in the same manual and there are errors, this is totally difficult to understand. And if you want to computerize this knowledge to give a machine, for instance, a specific computer machine or even a building machine or an engineering program, you want to give specific computer instructions to this program, you need to standardize certain terms. So this is basically what terminology does. It is focused on, first, understandability, common understanding of documents, translatability. So they create one only possible translation. For instance, you have an example here, store manager or store administrator. They say, okay, this is going to be gestionnaire du magasin. So they take a document and they make it more simple using one just single translation. Maintenance, retrievability has to do with disambiguation. This is very important both in translation and in terminology. Consistency, so using always the same term for the same concept. For instance, input key, enter key, line feed, etc. for one single concept. They will use only one single consistent use so that it is easy to understand. Okay. And also the same for consistent spelling. They will use a main spelling and they will say, okay, the main spelling is a record number and there are different variations that will appear here or there, but we are going to substitute all of them for this main term, for instance. So as you see, it is very much more practical oriented, going to the focusing on doing on creating simple language, easy to use a language, to be able to manage language easily by translators, users, workers of a specific company, etc. And then we have another part of terminology, which is not only applied to the companies, to companies, which is a more also applicable, for instance, for translators of engineering translators or science translators. Translators need a term bank. These term banks are also done by terminographers and terminologists. And in order to do this, we need three elements: a word processor, a spreadsheet, database management system, and a terminology management system. And this ends up in the creation of multilingual term banks, which are useful, as I said, also if you want to dedicate to your life to translation, for instance. You have here some links. The first one is very famous because it is used by the European institutions. So it has a lot of European Commission jargon language, which is a whole language by itself. And these are some other term banks that you can see as examples of how a term bank is designed. So, for terminological work, how would we do terminological work? We compile a corpus, we structure the terms, we establish a list of preferred terms, setting the canonical form and then the variants, and we include their translation. So if you ever want to create a term bank, these are the steps you need to follow. A term bank is, for instance, a term bank for terms. What is the difference? Sorry that I didn't mention this. The difference between a word and a term is that the term is a word that refers to specific language knowledge area. For instance, medical terminology, economic terminology, European terminology. Okay, so that's the difference between a term bank and a dictionary. A dictionary will focus on general language. In general, we can also have specific dictionaries, but the way of compiling the terms in a dictionary is different from a term bank, because a term bank doesn't include all the lexicological information that a dictionary will include. It's going to focus more on the form. This is the word, this is the meaning, these are the variants, this is how you translate them, that's it, okay? So this would be the steps for terminological work, and well, this is it. I don't know if you have any doubts. If you don't have doubts now, they are you can also yes, there is a question. Okay, I'm going to stop if you don't mind here the recording. And then we can continue a bit with some of the questions, okay?